This is the Creative Sports Podcast. My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Garrett Wright.
You know, producer's mindset. You gather stuff and you see what happens.
And Brock Rom.
What a wild, surreal, moment that, is never going to happen again in the history of the world.
Today, we're joined by Atiq Iqbal, who is the music coordinator with the NFL. We discover how he carved out a niche for himself, why reporting music is really important both for you and the artists, and what other freelance jobs he keeps for the love of the game.
Wow. What did we just hear, and how did you find that voice?
I've been doing it since I was a kid. And I just said, hello, my name is Atiq Iqbal, and I'm the music coordinator for the NFL Media Group.
Wow.
Hey, what's going on? It's Justin. Just wanted to give a shout out to APM for providing the track for us here on the Creative Sports Podcast. We're doing this podcast as an extension of the sports creative community on Slack. So if you're finding us and aren't a member of the community yet, you can sign up for free at sportscreativeslack.com.
Happy to be joined today by Atiq Iqbal, music coordinator for NFL Media. Atiq, thanks for coming on. I think a lot of people hear that title, and it's not a title a lot of people are familiar with in our industry. It's a very unique title, very unique position. Why don't you just give us the high-level overview of what does your job entail, and what does your day-to-day look like?
Okay. Thanks for having me, guys. The NFL music coordinator, I basically created this position for myself 10 years ago. When the NFL network was really small, we had a group of staff PAs, and all of us had to do every single job. We cut highlights, we did features, we did the ticker, we did everything, including recording the music, right? So we would all get assigned 2 weeks on every shift. So when it came to my turn, it would be, I would be so buttoned up about it. And the music's supervisor and the head of music licensing at NFL Films, I'd work directly with her. And she just became a big supporter of how I was doing the job, and I was always communicating with her. And so I think it just organically grew into the position. And I basically walked into this gentleman's office who's no longer here, but he's at ESPN, and said, I'm going to be the music coordinator. And he's like, I have no problem with that. So that's how that started. It was still sort of unofficial, and it became official many years later. But basically what I do is I oversee all the reporting for NFL Network, NFL Media, outside of NFL Films. I also help find music for our pieces, our features, and, you know, work with producers. And having cut highlights and features and everything else, I can work with a producer and suggest pieces of music based on having done that. And I don't have the traditional background of a music supervisor, right? A lot of my experiences is based on working games and having done, field produced and produced and, again, produced content that I was able to leverage into being able to create this position and also expand it and grow it. And I have a small team now, and we have an actual music supervisor who joined us a couple of years ago. That's how it started. Basically created the role for myself because it didn't exist before. And that's basically the short version of that story.
I mean, that's a great how and a great example of just kind of creating the role that you want. But maybe my next question is why did you want that? You know, what is it about music and that part of the industry and that part of production that made you passionate about it, that made you want to do this?
You know, to be honest with you, the music reporting part of it is very difficult. It's not fun. You know, people do not like to do that part of the job. But I just took such ownership of it, and people recognize that, especially Christine Black, Rimmel, and she appreciated that. And I was not a fan of it, but it was an opportunity to do something, opportunity to create something of my own. It allowed me to have longevity at the NFL network, and it'll be 15 years in August. I love music. Music is, you know, if you're cutting content and you guys do this, is that like, you know, for us, we had, you know, we have play by play, we've got the game footage. And if we're lucky, we have someone to narrate a script, right? But often, more often than not, you use the music to tell the story, or tell that audience how to feel, right? And it's so instrumental in everything we do that, you know, I was like, yeah, you know, I can do this. And again, I have a lot to learn still, but I think that was the thing. Just, I think, taking a chance on myself, you know, and just owning it, even though it wasn't the most glamorous thing. I just, you know, to be able to say that I created the role and I created the position and they sort of built a department around me. I take pride in that, you know? And, so, yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, music reporting is insanely important. And I think people who maybe edit or work primarily for the web or maybe have just different all encompassing contracts who don't totally have to worry about that all the time, don't really realize it. But when you're making, especially over the air or cable TV, that reporting is hugely crucial, from a legal standpoint for all your contracts. Right. And Garrett, I know maybe you appreciate this being working for a network, cable television network. But I know whenever we had to put things out and we had to report things, I'm just like, you're exactly right, Atik. I was like, man, I don't want to do this. I just spent everything I had working on this piece and putting everything I had into it. Now I got to go do some clerical music reporting, right? But it sounds like you've really taken that clerical music reporting and paired it with a creative side of helping producers find that music for their piece. And like you said, it's so important. And I say it all the time, and I think it's so true. Audio is the most important part of video, right? Like with that music or setting that mood. So how did that come about? You know, you started, you know, doing the clerical side, but how did you start suggesting music and kind of becoming that, you know, pseudo supervisor, pseudo coordinator role in helping producers with their pieces from that aspect?
I think one of the things was, I just said, hey, I can do this. And then, I remember there was a producer on game day morning. He said, hey, Atik, can you help me find a piece of music for this? And I'm like, all right. And so we have a system in-house that currently has over 2 million tracks available to us. And so that's how it started. Like a producer asked me and I was like, oh, I can do it. And then, you know, word got around, hey, Atik can do this as well. And, you know, for a long time, obviously, you know, most music supervisors have access to like labels and publishers and whatever else. I was not known. So what I relied on was the production library music, and I had good relationships with those people. And I built that over the years by going to NAB and just meeting people in person to have those relationships. And you know, a lot of it is just like also understanding how production works. And I think that really helped me, right? To be able to help them tell their stories that they were trying to tell.
Yeah. I mean, as a producer, I can 100% back that up. Finding music is maybe not my least favorite part of it, but it's not something that I look forward to just because of the amount of stuff to wade through in a lot of libraries. And I'm not sure ours is quite 2 million deep, but it's probably not ultra far off having the resources of Fox that we have. And it's tough. So to have people like you that are able to do that is key, because it's difficult. And it, I mean, how do you go about, like, just in your mind, you know, if a producer tells you, I'm looking for, you know, X type of music, what kind of things are you going through to find that track, to find the right tone? Like, is it just good search terms? Is it knowing, you know, which albums, which libraries, you know, are good for different things? How do you think about music that way?
So I visually think about music, right? Like I do the search term, right? And then I visualize based on what the producer said, or based on listening to a piece of music, I can be like, oh, this would be good for an open. This would be good for a bump. This would be good for a music video. This would be good for like a tease. So I can visualize in my head as I'm listening to a piece of music, oh, this is how someone could use it. And then I can, you know, I can then like say, okay, here's 10 tracks, you know. So if someone asks me for one piece of music, I try to provide like at least five to 10 so that they can choose you know, what they want. And then they can decide, or they can be like, hey, Atik, I need something closer to this, and then go and try to find something that matches the track that I originally suggested. So I really, again, I don't have the traditional background of a music supervisor. So I really have to rely on just that, that sports experience that I have to be able to, you know, I'm being around football my entire life. So be able to say, okay, this would be good for this.
Right. And it's almost, you know, a little bit tougher of a job because a music supervisor, like you said, has access to labels. They're working deals behind the scenes to promo new songs. And it's kind of like, well, here's the new Fall Out Boy song, you know, that's going to be on everything. Right. Whereas you have to have a little bit more intimate knowledge of music that's not commercially successful. Right. Right. And understand how to parse that library. Whereas a music supervisor, you know, a lot of times, and I'm not, you know, correct me if I'm wrong here, I'm not super versed on this, but they'll a lot of times by labels get pushed artists and songs on them. Yeah. The label wants promoted, but that may not be the best for the piece. Is that a good way of looking at it?
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing too to consider for us, we didn't have a lot of money or a budget towards music when I started out. You know, only in the last couple of years have we actually gotten a budget. Nothing great, but still it's something, and it's better than nothing. And so that too was another thing that we had to consider, right? Just for our everyday content, we couldn't go and get commercial music. So we had to rely on the music library stuff. I built out folders, and people used to poach my music from my folders that they had access to on the servers. So people knew, okay, we can go to Atik's folder and grab stuff. And I built that over like 7 years, you know, 8 years of people being able to find music and grab that, or even just coming to me and asking me for stuff, and I can send it to them. You know, the more people have access to the system, I think people have started to find their own stuff. But, you know, still there's a good number of people that reach out to us and to the music supervisor and say, hey, we need music for this. So,
yeah, I mean, that's what I was going to say. You've got to be a folders and playlist kind of guy, right? I mean, just like anytime you hear a track, it's like, you know, it goes in the bump folder, You even when it's not what you're looking for, you hear something, you're like, oh, that might be good for another use, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I used to try to do it by weeks, right? So I would create playlists just based on the season, the week one NFL, like that. And I would just have stuff that people could pull that, like, oh, this is new stuff, or this is, you know, and a lot of the times, a lot of the producers would be like, I need a heater or something that hasn't been used yet. And I think honestly, one of the reasons for me being able to do that part of the job and that becoming part of my job was that I was working with in the same room as the Good Morning, the Game Day Morning producers, content producers. So they would just like turn around and be like, hey, Atik, I need a piece of music for this. You know, and so that's how I think that started for me. And then people were like, hey, go ask Atik. He can find you something.
What a huge resource. I mean, I love looking for music. Garrett says it's one of his least favorite parts of the job. It's one of my favorite parts of the job, but it's also one of the most frustrating because I come from a very musical background. I've been a musician my whole life, and I will have something in the back of my head, right? I'll have a piece of music in the back of my head that, like, I want it to be this way, right? But of course, that doesn't really exist, right? Like the mood and the tempo and the key and the overall theme might exist, but the way I want it to build and descend maybe doesn't exist. Do you find that with a lot of producers, or do you find a lot of producers being picky on that sort of stuff because you or they get something stuck on their head for a piece that may or may not exist, or am I weird?
No, that's true. Some people definitely want certain things and we can't provide it. And like, that doesn't exist. That reminded me, I can't remember the specifics, but there was one time a number of years ago when a producer asked me for a specific type of music. And I was, you know, I searched far and wide and I reached out to people and everybody came back with, that does not exist. I don't think we have anything in, and I wish I had the specifics now. Remember, and I'm sure at some point it'll come back to me, but I remember like trying to go down this rabbit hole to find this one piece of music. And I'm like, this doesn't exist in our system, you know, in production library, music, any of them have it. So yeah, more often than not, a lot of producers do get stuck on tracks that they want. And, you know, for various reasons, obviously we can't use it, whether, you know, it's sometimes it's not licensable or it's way too expensive to license, you know, and you don't want to butcher your music budget just for one song, you know. Films does a really great job of using music, though. I don't know, you know, we have a great composer, David Robideau, and so, you know, I've worked with him, and he's been instrumental in, you know, my job being full-time, too. He really advocated for me.
I think one of the interesting things that you mentioned was, like, just your position within the, you know, the Good Morning crew, and I mean, like, physical position, them just being able to turn around and see you, you know, and ask you those questions kind of helped you maybe make that leap into a, you know, another role or additional responsibilities or those kind of things. Like, how has, you know, COVID changed that? Have you been on site the whole time? Has that?
I've been working from this room the entire year since we went home. Previous call, I was talking about this, March 13th, I've been working out of this room. And so it not having, and that, for me, like, I have a big part of how I operated was having one-on-one conversations with people in person, and that all went away. And then having to rely on Slack and emails and, you know, that, the immediacy just went away, you know, like, people could just literally, like, go find me at my desk or see me walk through the edit bays and be like, "Hey, Atik," you know. And that's also the other thing too, is a good reminder when people saw me and they're like, "Oh, we need to record our music." I miss that. I miss that a lot.
You're chasing people down now, aren't you?
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough to wait on people to respond to your email, where I could just walk to somebody's office and be like, "Hey, you know, I have a question about this, or did you see my email?" The immediacy is gone. So that's another difficult part of it. Like, and then, you know, like, with all the emails we get, sometimes stuff gets overlooked.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, that's the one thing that I've really read kind of through this pandemic is, you know, the loss of the office space, and, you know, with a lot of companies deciding they're going to stay remote, like, you know, getting noticed in person is one of the better ways to move up, as you've kind of mentioned, and just the way that the communication is going to be so important in this, you know, work from home, or, you know, whether people continue to work from home in the future, just how much communication is going to change. And it sounds like you're kind of starting to see that and how important that is, just because of what a pain in the butt it is to have to chase people down or not get to see them every day.
Yeah, I think I'll fall into those habits again, just going and talking to people in person, following up with an email. I think that for me it's better. You know, I didn't realize how much I missed human interaction until it was taken away from me, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I think that was such a difficult part of the pandemic for me. Even though I'm grateful that I was working every day at a job, you know, the middle part of this last year was really difficult for me. And I think one of the saving graces was that games came back and I was able to work games. So that really, you know, that connection with people is huge. You know, you don't realize how important it is and how much you need it until it's gone. And I definitely realized that. And, you know, just having, and then the other thing too, is just having something to look forward to every weekend is like, "Oh, I'm going to go, you know, work with people, and I'm going to, you know, interact with actual human beings and be at a game." And, that was just, it was such a blessing and really a saving grace for me to be able to do that. But I don't know if those games hadn't come back, I don't know what would have happened. It was just very difficult for me, to be honest with you.
Atik, I think the thing that's interesting is it's a lot of reporting in a lot of different directions. You've talked about working on shows. So overarching view, when you're trying to track down what music was used in what spot, I'm assuming you try and do it on the daily so you don't fall behind. But are you also categorizing things for digital content as well as broadcast content?
Absolutely. Digital, social, network, promos, And to your point, yeah, we try to do it every single day. I have a small team that makes sure that the shows report and then our digital content is reported. Same thing with social, right? Like everybody knows that they have to report music regardless of what they think. A lot of people think that we don't have to report our own music. That's not true. We need to. If you're using music, you have to report it. There's no if, and, or buts. Unless you have an independent artist that gave you the music for free and they've, you know, signed off on it, that they own everything and they've signed a letter of indemnity, you know, indemnifying whoever's using it, that's the only time you don't report music. But every other instance, you have to report music. Absolutely, 100%. Because it's a legal liability. Once you're, when you're signing, you know, Gary, you're with Fox. When Fox signs those deals with the production libraries, that's the same thing. They're responsible for reporting everything. You know, you don't want to put yourself at risk unnecessarily.
Yeah, absolutely true. I mean, it's just the, you know, we have people in our office who deal with the cue sheets and all that stuff, and you know, I'm very thankful. Honestly, usually our editors are the ones that are taking care of that in our office, as opposed to the producers. But it's, yeah, I mean, it's just, there's a lot that goes into it, and it's, you gotta, you know, cover your ass and make sure, you know, the legal liabilities are there, because they exist and they're scary if they fall through the cracks.
For everybody in the Slack channel saying, oh, I'll just use copyrighted music on this one post, it's no big deal. It is a big deal.
Yeah, it is a huge deal. And you know, Garrett and Justin, you reminded me, I actually created our reporting system. I pieced it together to make sure that people would report daily, and we could have access to that music, whether it was an EMPS, creating the columns and showing how to report it within EMPS, and then also with a management system database, and then also just creating Excel docs for people to use to submit to us, and then we would take it and put it into our system. But yeah, a lot of it was just like piecing it together and figuring out, all right. And again, it was honestly didn't have any resources to work with. So I was like, all right, how do I figure this out? And just, you know, there's enough people within the building and in IT that were willing to help me achieve those things. But other than, you know, it really was a lot of like piecing it together on my part. And that was, you know, you guys just reminded me of that, like having to do that, like sort of band-aid the process of music reporting and, you know, and to be, you know, yeah, there's a lot to it, you know? So yeah. And, you know, honestly, sometimes I would go and get the music myself, the information myself, because some producers wouldn't do it. And I'll be like, all right, I'll just go get it and do it for them. And I think that was a part of it too, is a lot of people saw that I was doing it. So then they would just, I think, expected me to do it. And then, you know, my manager said, no, you're not supposed to be doing that. They're supposed to do their job. It's part of their job. You know, they're creating content. They need to report it. And, you know, like with any, you know, third party, you know, if they're creating content for you, there's a list of deliverables that is required, right? And one of those things is music. You have to report the music, and that's just a part of it. Same thing internally. You just have to provide that information. No ifs, ands, or buts about it.
Yeah, it's funny because I, like you said earlier, people, it's not something that very many people enjoy doing. It is part of the job, and it needs to be handled. So going back to what you were talking about relating to, even if it's an internal piece of music, it still needs to be reported. Can we talk a little bit about what that reporting is then used for?
Okay. So the music is reported, and that those music reports go to the PROs, the performance rights organizations. In the United States, it's ASCAP and BMI. And then ASCAP and BMI takes that, and then they pay out royalties to writers and composers. And that's how writers and composers make their money. So that's the importance of reporting music, right? You're legally liable to do it. But the reason for it is because that's how writers and composers get paid for the work that they've done, you know, regardless of whether it's commercial or production music. that's how writers get paid.
So you mentioned licensing there. We can maybe get into that a little bit, because there's all sorts of different organizations that have music that you can buy licenses from to use their libraries. A number of different entities, the ones that you just mentioned there, the ASCAP and BMI are some of the larger licensees, right? So can we talk about the differences between some of the licensing types? There's a master license, there's a sync license, and there's a performance license, right?
Yeah. Honestly, when it comes to the PROs, those don't make that much. It just, those things really are on the artist side and how those artists get paid, right? Whether they're on publishing or master or writer on the piece of music, really to us, when we're reporting it, doesn't really matter, right? Like, we just have to make sure it's 100% cleared to use. And then PROs, you know, whatever song split is done on the artist side or the writer composer side, that's where that stuff really comes into play, right? Again, you know, when you license a commercial piece of music, you have to do A side and B side, label side, and then publisher side, right? For the master or whatever. I'm a little dyslexic with this because I'm still learning, and I always get those two confused. But really, you know, those things, those sides pay out the same, and both sides have to agree on what the fee is. But really, at the end of the day, for us, it just, those terms really matter to the other side, the artists and the publisher. They're the ones that really, really care about publishing and master and what their splits are and how much they get, right? That's where they make their money. To us, we just pay the fee and that's it, you know? Like, here, okay, this side we pay this much and this side we pay this much. That's it. And then on the other side, that's how they divide the money. So that's why it's important on that side.
Right. It's important to know that your composers and your artists, they need to get paid for the work they're doing, because otherwise they're not going to put the time in to make, you know, and I'm mainly talking about, you know, music library and the artists who provide music for those libraries, right? That's their livelihood, right? And it's important. I know it's easy just to go out and download an MP3 and not report it and just use it and say, oh, it's not that big a deal. But you got to think, if you really like the track, you're going to want that composer to make more of those tracks, right? And make better libraries for you. So it's a crucially important part of the entire system.
Yeah. And to your point about reporting, like when I was in the Edibase, and I really stopped being in the Edibase like about 6 years ago, but I would always just, as I'm cutting the music videos or whatever I'm working on, I would just ask the editor, hey, just give me the information, or I'd pull it up in the system because I'm the one who picked the music, and I would just directly put it in. And I would do it as I'm working on it, as the editor was like, you know, fiddling with it. I knew the piece of music and I would just enter it in. And that at the end of the day, I was like, all right, you know, don't wait till the end of the day, because that does become tedious to you guys' points earlier, that like, oh, I spent the entire 8 hour shift or however long you're working on this piece, and then this last thing, I don't, you know, you don't feel like motivated to do it. I get it. So for me, you know, I would just say, hey, you know, as you're cutting it, you know, just enter it in, you know, like, and so, you know, now there's, you know, the PAs and that work in the Edibase have someone there working with them, pulling footage and whatever else. So they have those people entering that information.
I want to kind of change topics maybe a little bit here and talk about your relationship building that you've done, because you talked earlier about building relationships with the music companies, you know, through going to different, you know, events or conferences or those things. How have you seen that help you? How is that paid off for you? And in what ways are you talking with the music companies in your role?
So a lot of it is just like, you know, you obviously, I think it really helps to have like one-on-one relationships with people, like genuine relationship with people outside of an email, right? So I can reach out to somebody and say, hey, I'm looking for a piece of music for this. Can you send me something? I think that's the, in terms of like being able to get access to music that normally isn't widely available. And then people willing to send you stuff. And, you know, through the course of the last couple of years, what's happened is that I've you know, been added to the distribution list. So I'm aware of what's coming out and have, you know, I can suggest stuff. Hey, I have this track coming out. People send me stuff now and I'll be like, you know, I don't know if we can use this, but, sorry, I was work email. I don't know if I can use this right now, but I'll keep it in my back pocket and you never know. Or if there's a certain sound, I know, like, you know, someone sent me some stuff recently, two tracks, and I was like, you know, I don't know if it's going to get used, but I know this producer might like it. So I sent it to him and I was like, hey, I was listening to this and it reminded me of you. And, you know, just give me some thoughts on it. So yeah, like that's the thing, just being able to get music. And if I need to too, I can reach out and say, hey guys, I'm looking for this piece of music. It has to sound like this. And that goes the same thing with production libraries and be like, hey, I need help. I can't find this. And they'll you know, suggest stuff. So that's how that relationship works. Just, you know, I think it's mutually beneficial to have that recognition, right? Like, so you can reach out to somebody and say, hey, I need help. Can you help me out with this? And, yeah, I think with anything, right, I think a lot of it is just relationship building, regardless of whether, you know, you're in production or music or whatever else it is. 'Cause you never know, you know, what that relationship could lead to, you know?
No, absolutely. I mean, have you guys, and I'm just curious, maybe the answer is no, but have you guys ever done, you know, custom music through production libraries? Have you worked with that much?
Not custom, but there's definitely people that we've worked with. Actually, yeah, like one of, you know, there's a friend of a producer that we use for custom stuff. So yeah, we do use custom stuff outside of library, production library music and commercial music. And, you know, we've used independent artists. What, you know, I gave this example is there was a country artist I had met a couple of years ago, a photographer at the NFL. She's no longer there, but she said, hey, can you meet with my friend? And she, you know, I went and had coffee with her. And so she was like, hey, you know, I want to, you know, get into sync and stuff. And so she ended up creating a song that was kind of football, but it was just like, it sounded too familiar to, like, I think it was Sunday Night Football. Didn't end up using it, but a couple years later, she had come out with a country song called Los Angeles. She's part of a band called Honey County. And so it was kind of a tough stretch, but I was like, hey, can you get a remix? And she's like, I have no money to get a remix. So I had a friend of mine remix it and we ended up using it. And there's, you know, if you go, I can send you guys a link so you can see an example of it. We ended up using that remix track for Thursday Night Football when the Rams that were playing the Vikings in Los Angeles. And so we ended up using that track, but it came together so quickly. But that was, again, because she maintained a relationship. She was really nice. And that's the thing I always say is be kind to people, you know, because you never know. And that was an opportunity for her. And that was the, like, her biggest sink that she'd gotten, even though she didn't get paid for it, you know? And yeah, so, like, you know, we definitely use other people. And, it, you know, like, if people are willing to let us use stuff for free, it's that just makes it easier, you know?
Never hurts.
Right.
Yeah. Just out of curiosity, I mean, when you're doing those things, and I'm not looking for specific details or anything like that, but, like, how does that change what you're doing as far as, you know, the queuing, the back end, you know, the contracts and that stuff when you're doing independent artists and kind of some of the custom stuff? Obviously with this one, it's, they're giving it to you for free. So that's a little easier, right? But
it's that was so nuts. 'Cause I was actually working the game for Fox doing stats and I'm like, I'm at the Coliseum doing this and I'm trying to get this done so we could get the song cleared and used in time for the Total Access Open after the game, immediately after the game. So it was just like a mad scramble of like emails and texts and like, and I also try to keep stats during the game. So I was just like, it was so crazy. But you know, I mean, for the most part, like, you know, I think there's just protocol. There's agreements you have to sign, you know, letter indemnity, stuff like that. Just the normal legal documents with any license that you would do, you know, regardless of whether it's an independent or someone that you work for hire.
Sure. So it sounds like you're still doing, doing some freelance stuff.
That's a big part. I mean, you know, like I think a lot of people identify me with the music part of it, but like I came up in sports as I was a manager in college for the football and basketball team. I worked in media relations. I worked in marketing. I did all that stuff. And, you know, I think, you know, I still do stats. I still sideline produce, field produce as needed on a game. I did that throughout the season. I also sort of act as a pseudo production manager on site. I love sports and I love working games. And, that's just a big part of what I do, you know, like, and I'm blessed to be able to still be able to work games.
I think the insight there is extremely important, right? Even though you're doing stats for Fox, you know, understanding how that production workflow works can only help, right? And that I know has helped me. I've done a lot of things in my career, but it's really helped me get to the point right now of where I can support those things in a way that I wouldn't be able to if I hadn't dipped my toe into it or done it for a while or tried this or tried that. You would say that a lot of these, you know, your freelance gigs, your time as an editor, your time as a producer really helped feed into your current career.
Absolutely. You know, I would not have gotten to where I am had it not been for me working the games. And then people, you know, honestly, I ended up at the NFL Network because of a gentleman named Fred Johnson, who was an AD for CBS Sports. And he would just see me driving up and down California, going everywhere to work games. And when I started, guys, I made $75 a day. And I would wake up at like 2 a.m, drive from Fresno to San Diego for 6 a.m. call to make $75. You know, that's how it started. And he saw that commitment. And then he got a job ADing at the NFL Network. And then he gave me an email of a woman and I emailed her and sent her my resume. And then I ended up getting hired within 48 hours. And the person that hired me is actually at ESPN, Andrew Villa. And he got my resume. He's like, hey, call me tomorrow after 10 o'clock. And so the next day I was getting ready to call him and he ended up calling me before. We have a 10-minute conversation. He asked me a couple questions and then he says, oh, who do you know at the NFL Network? I was like, oh, I know the only person I knew is Fred Johnson. And he's like, oh, I know him. And then later that afternoon, I get a call from New York saying, hey, we'd like to offer you a full-time position. And that's how it started. You know, wow. It's just having that, building those relationships and working those games. And honestly, a lot of what made me successful at working the games is that I worked around a football team, you know, Fresno State, and Pat Hill at the time ran the team like an NFL team, right? He came from the NFL world. He was an assistant coach. Then he came to Fresno State and I learned a lot and I knew who to talk to get stuff done. And that really allowed me when I went to work games and as a runner and people were like, hey, I need this. Okay. I know who to go to talk to. And people saw that and they're, And I brought value and that's what allowed me to work Super Bowls and everything else, you know, but it all started because of my love working in sports TV started because of my love for UCLA men's basketball. And I wanted to see them play in the tournament in 2002.
That's so awesome. I feel like the runner stories are there's so many people that got their start as runners and got their start just like, I will do whatever you need me to do.
Yep.
And it's just that is so, it's so cool to hear that because that's kind of my story too. And I know like, you know, Brock and Justin, mm-hmm. like us three actually together when we were in college would go work and run events. And I mean, we drove out from Nebraska to California to go work the X Games as runners. Yep. And me and Justin drove from Nebraska to Michigan, like, you know, 8 to 10 hours to work an Ohio State Michigan game. For again, like probably $100 a day, you know, that, you know, we thought we were just loaded and we probably spent all that in gas money, just getting there, but like just the experience was so great. Right. And that's, I love hearing that. And it's something that we really stress on this podcast is like network, 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 because those are the stories.
I say build a relationship with people, right? It should be two ways, right?
Yeah.
Where did you guys go to college? You guys all went to the same college?
We all went to Nebraska. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Wow.
And it sounds like you're a Fresno guy?
Fresno State, yeah. I was a manager I did both basketball and football, and I did everything you could imagine at Fresno State. Worked for the AAA baseball team too as a press assistant. There was no opportunity. I mean, I even executive produced a little high school football show on the local ESPN radio show. For a couple of months, but I didn't get paid anything for it. And when I wanted to do something more, they're like, we can't afford to pay you. You have way too much experience. I'm like, what? What do you got? it was tough, you know, very honestly, like, people, you know, I've talked about this on various other platforms and stuff. My 20s, I was just trying to make it, just trying to survive. I didn't know where my next paycheck was coming from. I just hustled, you know. 30s, you know, I landed at the NFL Network and sort of started establishing myself. And there was ups and downs too, you know. But now in my 40s, I've had a modicum of success and I've done amazing things. And so just, you know, like for me, I kind of sort of knew that success would come late to me in life. And I just kind of like in the back of my mind, you know, just keep working hard and be kind. And I mean, and, you know, good things will happen. So. That's just sort of been my philosophy. Try to be kind and work hard and let the chips fall where they may.
You've had a lot of great experiences in sports so far. Can you take me through, you know, why March Madness has been so special to you and to your career?
I talk about my love for UCLA basketball, and that led me to working the tournament in 2002. And then I ended up working a string of, you know, 18 regional finals at different locations. But through that time, the two greatest moments of my life happened, and I never thought that they would happen. And they're as equally important. And it, you know, one is meeting Muhammad Ali, my childhood hero. And it was the most emotional moments of my life. Like I, you know, his wife had to console me because I got so emotional. And wow. And I also made sure that I, you know, cleared it with the head of the NCAA tournament site that, hey, I'm going to go talk to Muhammad Ali. And then I cleared it with our producer to make sure he was okay with it. I'm like, sure. He's my childhood hero. I need to go meet him. And that was when I heard that he might be at the game. And I just wanted to do everything to make sure that happened. So then I just went and met him. And it was unbelievable. I never thought that moment would happen. He's my childhood hero. And then the other thing equally as important is that meeting my North Star. I never thought that would happen either. And that guiding light that just sort of has allowed me to just do all these amazing things that I, you know, to have the inspiration and the motivation to do these things. So I'm grateful for those things. That's why March Madness and not working the tournament this year really sucked.
Yeah,
just because how much, you know, like not being there, not being on site and just knowing how amazing that event is, you know, on so many levels, but on even a more personal level. And then to see UCLA make it to the Final Four.
Unbelievable. What a run.
Yeah, absolutely.
When you say find your North Star, what do you mean by that? And what did that look like for you?
It was meeting a person that just sort of did not expect to meet. And, you know, like everybody sort of needs a North Star. Like there's, you know, there was this emptiness, right? They're like, you're like, oh, you know, if I find this piece, I can sort of, and then I met met this person, and then it just, everything sort of just fell into place, you know, like it's hard to explain.
Yeah.
Everything just fell into place. And that's been a source of like honestly, like motivation and inspiration. And really just like just watching this person operate just really has been amazing. And, you know, just to be, you know, be fearless and try things and take risks, you know.
That's so cool.
I think that's the biggest part of that. And I hadn't had that. So those are the two things I take away.
That's awesome.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're enjoying this podcast, we'd love it if you shared it with a friend or a coworker, and leave us a 5-star rating so other people will be able to find us as well. And don't forget to subscribe so that you're the first person to catch each new episode. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.